I had said, what would be the gay Chinatown? What would be the gay Kramer versus Kramer? And a light went off and I thought, yeah.
Are you ready? Are you shitting down?
It's season four of the Shine On podcast. Absolutely terrific guests. My take on what's happening in the world of divorce. Are the stakes high? You better believe it. The unfiltered and real take on what divorce is like from the absolute best professionals. Life, love, marriage, divorce, relationships, finances. Topics that far too often many people shy away from. But not here on the Shine On podcast. It's episode 73 of the Shine On podcast. I'm Evan Shine. Joining me on the podcast for an absolutely fantastic conversation is award-winning screenwriter Peter Nikowitz. Peter and I dive into and discuss the 2023 film Our Son, who Peter co-wrote with the great Bill Oliver. Our Son's a film that features a star-studded cast with absolutely terrific performances by Billy Porter, Luke Evans, and so many other actors and actresses. The film is about a same-sex couple fighting over custody of their 8-year-old son. Producer Dave, I know you share Peter's passion for movies. And look, in the conversation with Peter, we discussed the making of Our Son, what's unique about this film. And we also talked about other movies such as Kramer v. Kramer and Marriage Story, and really what led to the making of this film by Peter and Bill Oliver.
Yeah, I am a big movie buff, and movies like Kramer versus Kramer are kind of hard to watch for me because they're sad. But divorce is sad, and you got to go through some pain to get to the truth and happiness and all that. And so all that's kind of mixed up in this conversation, and it was a lot of fun talking to him about how he thinks his film can be really the first divorce movie about a same-sex couple, right?
Yeah. No, and his take on it was interesting. The whole process, going from writing it to producing it to having it really go to the big screen. So we're going to get into all of that. But before we do, Dave, you know what time it is?
I think it's time for the docket, sir. So let's do it.
It is. It's time for the docket. And I know you've been cooking up one hell of a docket. So as we always do on the podcast, let's fire it up.
And now, let's see what's on the docket.
A couple of great items for the docket today. The first item comes to us from the Washington Post.
Item one.
Now, this is an advice column, and the question posed to columnist Carolyn Hacks is, should I apologize to my ex-wife for cheating 35 years after the divorce? The writer says, dear Carolyn, my father recently passed away. He describes how he's been in touch and seemingly on good terms with his ex throughout the years, but it just occurred to him that this might be, after all these years, is this not the opportune time to apologize for his behavior that really led to the divorce? Your thoughts on this one, Evan?
Dave, this is one of those questions. I can see both sides to it. On one hand, look, the couple divorced 35 years ago. Both spouses clearly moved on, and making an apology for cheating or really revisiting that time in one's life, is it necessary? Maybe, maybe not. Potentially upsetting to think about and reliving that time period. I get that. On the other hand, and there's that side, and I lean more towards this side, which says, you know what? Apologize. Why not? Your ex reached out, expressed condolences, right? The passing of a loved one. If there's something you want to apologize for, I say do it.
Yeah.
What's your take?
I guess I kind of went through the same thought process as you. I think although honesty is great, I'm not sure you want to relitigate anything that happened before. In other words, there's a small risk that you might make things worse if you say, sorry, I slept with my secretary, Sandy, and the ex says, you did what? So, however, just simply making an apology, which is what the writer seems to intend, is just to apologize for his behavior and just say, after these years, maybe I've never said it. I'm really sorry for the hurt that must have caused you. And that, I think, can absolutely be a good thing and strengthen their relationship. Because as I've said on the show before, your relationship with your ex is very important. Always going to be part of your life.
And that's why everybody, Dave, you need an advice column. We said it in 22, we said it again in 23, and here we are in 2024. I mean, producer Dave, you need your own divorce column, advice column.
Yeah.
I mean, you give advice like no other.
Well, very kind of you to say, Evan. I don't know. Yeah, if I do it, let's just say I'll give it away for free. I think that'll be about what it's worth. But we can move on to another terrific item. Item two.
Item two.
And it comes to us from Emerson College Radio in my backyard in Boston, WECB. The station reports that two divorced moms have bought an $800,000 house together and become platonic life partners. So we talk a lot about how to handle life post-divorce. This is one that, well, I guess it's a new one on me. What did you think, Evan?
Dave, I got to tell you, I love this. But you're right. We talk about survive and thrive all the time. We talk about the next chapter. We talk about the second act in life after divorce. And people want to believe that this hope, this dream, that things are going to be better, that there's a reality behind it. You want inspiring? This is it. Look, you may have not heard about this. I may have not heard about this before, but this is a story of two friends who, after their divorce was finalized, provided support for one another. And how did they do this? And what was their motivation? Well, according to interviews with the New York Times and Washington Post, the mom told the news outlets that their primary motivation was to create a safe, nurturing environment for their children while enjoying the benefits of homeownership. So I say, Dave, I think it's great.
I think it's great, too. I mean, there's a photo of these women. They both look young, vibrant, and beautiful. So, I mean, I wonder how long they're both going to be single. But for the time being, anyways, I mean, it really is an exercise in problem solving. Finances post-divorce can be a challenge, of course. And I don't know if they've got a mortgage, but if they are, then they're paying half what they normally would. So good on them.
Sounds like a no-brainer.
We're now up to the portion of the program where we hear from you, the listener, another edition of Ask Evan.
Ask Evan.
Ask Evan.
Ask Evan.
Ask Evan, this episode, the letter comes from Stan in New Rochelle, New York, and Stan writes as follows. Dear Evan, my spouse and I have filed for divorce, and my one priority in the whole thing is getting it done sooner than later. How long will the whole process take, and what factors can affect the time period one way or the other?
Stan, let me ask you a question. How much time do you have? Because your question is absolutely fantastic. And look, the two most common questions I get asked are, how long is my divorce going to take? And how much is my divorce going to cost? And here's the thing. The answer is the same. Stan, you're ready? Are you sitting down? Here's the answer. It depends. Now, look, I know you may not love the answer. I know you may not love hearing it depends. But the reality is, it does. It does depend. What does it depend on? Look, at least four people are involved in any divorce, the two spouses and the two attorneys. If the case is in court, add a judge, possible experts, the reasonableness of you and your spouse, the positions each of you take, the ability of the attorneys to move things forward and negotiate a settlement are all going to be factors in how long your divorce takes. My advice to you, see the forest through the trees. See the big picture. Don't get hung up on small things. There's a price and tremendous value to being done. And Stan, let me leave you with this story. Your question reminds me of a story a few years ago. I had a potential consult, a potential new client come into my office, and he said the following to me. Evan, these are my goals. I really want to get this done as quickly as possible. I really don't want to spend too much money on the process. Hope you don't take any offense, although you seem like a really nice guy. And oh, by the way, I want to give my wife of 25 years absolutely nothing. And I tell this story because it's the perfect example, Stan, of how being totally unreasonable is going to directly impact the goals of keeping costs down and also getting divorced quickly.
Yeah, on the one hand, you can give Stan credit for knowing his priorities, but I think it is fair to ask as a follow-up question, are you sure that's your only priority? Because are you willing to compromise on most things? Are you willing to be agreeable? And because sometimes all of a sudden, like you say, Evan, there might be a situation where you don't want to give all that up, and all of a sudden, you got other priorities. But excellent advice as usual.
That's another edition of Ask Evan. If you want to submit a question for Evan to answer on the podcast, email producer Dave at david@pod617.com.
Our featured guest on the Shine On podcast this week is award-winning screenwriter Peter Nicholas. Peter has co-written 3 produced films with director Bill Oliver, and one of those films is the outstanding film Our Son, which is about a gay couple with an 8-year-old son who file for divorce. Peter, I'm thrilled to have you on today's episode. Welcome to the Shine On podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Peter, I want to talk about the film Our Son, which is absolutely terrific. And it may seem self-evident, but tell us, why is the movie and the film called Our Son? Yeah.
I wanted to focus the themes on ideas about family and family relationships. It is a movie about gay divorce. And in a sense, the movie is about how families can kind of come together, but also break apart. And we wanted to focus on kind of what was most important about that.
And so what were the challenges in co-writing a story that really gets into exactly what you were just talking about, complex emotions, relationships, and family dynamics?
Well, as a screenwriter, those are kind of things that we want to get at the drama within a family. Anyone who has been in a relationship of any kind, but also a relationship between two men, there are different dynamics. Men are used to a certain kind of behavior, certain kind of relationship in the world. And I think for our purposes of telling the story about Nikki and Gabriel, played by Billy Porter and Luke Evans, in some ways, like most kind of family dramas, it's a story about power, but it's also a story about love and intimacy and passion, but also the lack of passion.
And Peter, this may be one of the first movies that I can recall that really explores child custody with a same-sex couple as the central prominent figures. Is it a shame that it's taken this long?
I don't know that it's a shame that it's taken this long, but I do remember watching The Big Sick. Do you remember that movie? I remember watching that movie and thinking like, wow, this is really a great story. It's really sad. It feels really kind of lived in. And I thought to myself after watching it that I want to do a movie that is something like The Big Sick, that feels really true, really emotional and emotionally true. And so after I watched it, I was talking to my manager at the time, and we were talking about this idea and like trying to find something that seemed to address those desires. And I had said, I want to do something like that, but gay. And he said, yeah, what would be the gay Chinatown? What would be the gay Kramer versus Kramer? And a light went off and I thought, yeah.
And you mentioned Kramer v. Kramer, which is a fantastic, one of the most talked about films that portrays custody, divorce, going back many, many, many years, which is great. And you talk about your inspiration and where it comes from. Take us into the mind, your mind, as a screenwriter. Where do you draw upon your inspiration, whether it's Our Son, whether it's other projects, other films? Take us into the mind and how you start thinking about, develop, and create various projects.
Various projects or various characters or both?
Both.
Well, I write with Bill Oliver, who directed the film. And we kind of work together, brainstorming, shooting out ideas. What would happen if this happens? What would happen if this happens? A lot of it is thrown out, of course, but I feel like eventually we find our way in. Sometimes it takes a while to realize what the actual story is. We also met early on. So my first feature film, Jonathan, came out in 2018. And just when that film was premiering in Tribeca, the same manager arranged for us to meet a producer named Fernando Luero. And he became attached pretty early on into the development of the film. And we worked together with him for most of the, more than pretty much. We worked with Fernando for the development and the making of the film. And Fernando worked tirelessly for years. We started talking about it, I think, in 2018. And then just started working on it and looking at the page. And at that time was the movie about the young kid, who, eighth grade. I think that's what it's called. Do you remember that?
It rings a bell.
Or eighth grader. It's anyway. So he was sort of suggesting that we go in a direction that was like eighth grade, which turned out to be not right for this movie, but a good sort of introduction to. Yes, that's it.
There we go.
Yes, Bo Burnham. Right, which is a great film. We ended up not going in that direction. It was kind of a bit more, not sure, focused on a kind of more specific family with Gabriel and with Billy Porter's character and Luke Evans' character. And we began to find their voices and work towards developing their characters, which really was happening over the entire course of the writing experience. We kept revising and I hope sort of deepening the relationships that we see on camera.
And Peter, the film addresses the complexities of modern relationships, really the challenges of maintaining a family unit. What messages or insights do you hope viewers take away from the film?
Well, I think first and foremost, I hope that many people see gay couples in a way that is more realistic. Living in New York City and Manhattan, gay couples are everywhere and are regular and seem accepted. But there are a lot of places where I'm sure it's different from that. And it was important to us to show that this was a real family, not a family that is like a sitcom, or not a family that is meant to be satirical in any way. It's a real family with real wants and desires and goals for their lives that suddenly falls terribly awry when Billy Porter's character decides that he needs to leave the relationship.
Tell us about the significance of friendship and the support networks in the lives of Nikki and Gabriel and how they evolve throughout the story and the film.
Yeah, I love that question because to me, the friends and the story are so integral to the story. As gay people, we have our biological families, but we also have our chosen family. And it was really important for me to include a strong sense of chosen family as well as biological family and what that brings to gay couples and gay families, which I think is about, well, just that whole idea of chosen family and what that means, that we have our biological families and our chosen families. And it's very much the experience of most gay people. There was a line in from Pam, the lawyer, that we took out because, not because there was anything wrong with it per se, but that Bill felt that the ideas that she was saying was more subtextual or should be more subtextual than actually what it was. But when Nikki is meeting with Pam, his divorce lawyer, she says something to the effect of, as gay people, we have a lot of shame. Tune out all that noise. I think the right to divorce is just as much a point of pride as the right to marry, which I thought was, I kind of liked it. I mean, I was a little worried about proposing the idea of shame, but I think so many gay people, gay adults, still have like a kind of kernel of growing up in a family that where you're kind of aware that you are very different with your straight siblings and your straight parents. And I don't know, I thought that was an interesting line to have. I was sort of sad to see it go, but on the other hand, I understand why. So, sure. And that it is probably better to leave that as the unsaid.
Peter, was there a moment for you that you realized and you became confident that the screenplay you knew was going to be brought to life?
Yes, but there were also, because we were writing it during COVID. Oh. And so there were times where we thought like, oh God. And you hope that it's going to happen. And I have been lucky in having we made the short. And then there were years after we made the short, we wrote a number of scripts where nothing really happened with them. To those listeners who are screenwriters, yes, you have a lot of scripts that will not get made. But when one or two does, or three or more gets made, it is, I do have to say, it is really lovely. It's very gratifying to see a script come to life. And also to see a script come to life in ways that are surprising. Actor gives a line in such a way that you never thought he or she would say it that way. And I love those moments. I love when actors are trying things out and making the role theirs.
Peter, staying with that theme, what advice would you give to aspiring writers who are interested in exploring themes of family, identity, and relationships in LGBTQ families?
Go and do it. That's what I would say. There are a ton of movies about gay families. I mean, straight families. There are not a ton of movies about gay families. And there's that line about all families are similar in some way, but also very different. Sure. And I think that's true. I think we tried to work to make a specific family that feels like they're real.
Who was the most important character in the film and why?
Oh.
And right. Yeah. If you can pinpoint one, at least from your perspective, whether it's the message, whether it's the role, whether it's the significance.
I mean, overall, I think the most important aspect of the film, aside from, I hope, telling a good and entertaining story, is that gay people have families, and gay people, it isn't because they have families, but gay people are just people. I think we still need to tell that to the world. We still need to understand that we have lives and that we have desires and that we have kind of a world of experience beyond our sexuality and difference, which is important to note, but also important to not note sometimes. Sometimes not noting that difference is maybe just as important. One of my favorite scenes in the film, which was also the first scene that we shot, was between Billy Porter's character and his mother, Maya, and she comes to visit because he moves out of his house and gets an apartment. And I really loved that scene, just watching it happen, but also watching the version that's in the film. And the chemistry between the two is really amazing there, and funny. I mean, I think that's what I like most about it, is that it's funny. They're talking about how she came, but not his father. And in my imagination, the father isn't uncomfortable with his son as a gay man, but he's more of a distant father, whereas Felicia Rashad's character is warm and bubbly. And I sort of imagined that she was a therapist of some kind. But I remember watching that scene get filmed and feeling like, okay, I think this might work. this could be really good.
So you mentioned Felicia Rashad, you mentioned Billy Porter. Getting the right cast is important, I would think, in any film. But mm-hmm. was there an extra significance or played on getting the right cast to play the characters in Our Son?
Well, we did make an effort with this film to get gay actors playing gay characters, especially with the principal roles. So Felicia Rashad is an exception. Nikki's mother is played by Kate Burton, another great actor that I was very excited to work with. But the casting process is always kind of iffy. We had attached Billy and Luke early on. And then as we were coming close, and then there were these delays for COVID because there were those COVID years. And again, our manager, Josh, would say like, well, you could try to make a movie now, but a million of the budget is going to go to COVID protocols and you don't want that. And he was right. But the question was about casting.
The casting. And yeah. Was there an extra emphasis on getting the right cast, or the cast that was going to be the great fit and really bringing the story to life?
Yeah, I mean, casting after script, it's casting, casting, casting. We had a great casting director who helped us find people. We also made lists. As I think I said, Billy and Luke were attached early on. Uh-huh. And it was because of that Fernando was able to raise and then lose and then raise again the budget for the film. So we wanted to kind of make sure that we had a group of friends that felt like friends that would seem real to gay couples, also to straight couples. And it's really hard to create that, especially when it's a low budget film. So there wasn't really much rehearsal time at all. They came and they're actors, so they are gregarious and social. And I think some of the best scenes in the film are the ones with Luke's character and his friend group.
What's been some of the takeaways that you've heard from audiences and people, regardless of anyone's background? What's been the takeaway for many people?
It's sad. I'm not sure. I knew that it would be sad because it's a sad story, but I don't think I fully embraced how sad it would be. But I was very pleased that it was also funny and that we were somehow able to combine some really intense and sad moments for the characters to go through, but also some really funny ones. And I don't think of Bill and I as comedy writers. We're not like five jokes a minute or whatever it is in comedy. But I like having a sense of comedy and sadness and kind of balancing the two in a story. I mean, it's not, it may not be right for every story, but it seemed right for this story to have a balance, because ultimately the divorce is happening because they feel like their lives are going to be better and better for Owen. And because of that, I think it's ultimately a hopeful story.
And Peter, I now want to bring on producer Dave to take it away for a fun segment that we do on the Shine On podcast, They Said It. And Dave, I believe you have a special edition of They Said It for our featured guest.
That's correct, Evan. We're going to the movies today with movie clips in this edition of They Said It.
They said it.
They said it.
They said it.
So what we've done, Peter, is round up a few memorable moments from film that have to do with divorce. And we will start with a scene from one of the films that you already mentioned earlier in this episode, Evan, and that is Kramer versus Kramer. So let's take a quick, it's about a 60-second clip here, and then we'll have Peter give us his thoughts.
I understand.
Well, the problem is that your mommy and I both want you to live with us, see? So that's why we decided to go see this man, who I told you is the judge. We let him decide because he's very wise and experienced about these things. See, we talked to him for a few days, and after that, we asked him what he thought. You know what he said? Be with mommy, thought a perfect idea.
Yeah.
Move in with her and live there from now on. And I'm really lucky because I get to have dinner with you once a week. And two times a month, we spend the weekends together.
Where's my bed going to be? Where am I going to sleep?
Oh, well, mommy's figured that all out. You have your own bedroom at her place?
Where all my toys can be?
At mommy's. We're going to take all your toys over there. Play your cards out of it. She should buy us some new ones.
Who's going to read my bedtime stories?
Mommy will.
Kiss me tonight anymore, are you?
No, I won't be able to do that. But I'll get to visit. It's going to be okay.
Let's pause it there. Really a heartbreaking scene. It's getting a little dusty here in the studio for me. Peter, your thoughts on this? Any thoughts at all on that scene from Kramer versus Kramer?
Yeah, I think it's a great scene and really, really poignant because, of course, there has to be a kind of coming out moment in which the parents have to tell little Billy that, I think his name is Billy.
We'll take your word for it. I can check that, but go ahead.
I'm pretty sure that it's Billy.
Okay, yeah.
They have to tell Billy that they're going to get divorced. And of course, it's a really different context. I think the film is like maybe from 1977 or 1970, between 1977 and 1979, somewhere in there. I should know that, but if I'm a better person,
that's all right.
Have that. But it's a really important moment because it's the moment where he's telling his son that they're separating, and it's at a time when probably very few other friends of his will be going through this experience. The film doesn't show anyone else in that world going through it, although there is the character of, there's a friend, oh no, she isn't divorced. Think
is it the Joe Beth Williams character, or I'm cheating? I googled it. By the way, I think you were on it. The novel Kramer versus Kramer was 77. The film was 79, and the character's name is Billy.
Okay, and then there's the neighbor who is, what is her name? If I can,
Jane Alexander.
So there has to be a moment where the parent has to tell the kid that they're going to be separating. And Kramer versus Kramer was a groundbreaking film and a successful film, and I think a really good film. So it isn't a movie an easy movie to kind of do battle with. Not that I feel like we're actually doing battle. There are no other stories about a gay divorce other than ours that I can think of. But there are a lot of divorce films.
I'm sorry. Please finish, Peter.
No, I was just going to say that I think both Bill and I feel, and probably everyone in the cast or people who worked on it, cast and crew, that it was really a great experience to feel like we were telling this story. And crew people don't normally come up to you and say, like, it's a really great story.
The scene we just saw, I think, is a triumph. There's many would argue no finer actor than of his generation than Dustin Hoffman. To me, that scene comes off, and the young actor was tremendous as well. But the writing, I think, was spot on. And if I were to write that, I know it would come out as trite, as hackneyed, because I think it's so difficult to write a scene like that and have it come off as purely realistic. And it really felt that way. Is that kind of where you were shooting when you wrote your script?
Yeah. What's so powerful about Kramer versus Kramer is how quickly and clearly you get the dynamics of that family. Part of those dynamics, I think, has to do a little bit with the 1970s take on divorce, which at the time was just very, very different. Also makes sense that Meryl Streep's character has to get away, has to leave this marriage in order to be of any use to her son. Our goal was different because we didn't have a wife. We had two men. And one of the main things that we wanted to say by having two gay men in a relationship together who dissolve their relationship is to point out the similarities between the two experiences and the idea of love at the center of both of them.
By the way, I shouldn't give short shrift to Justin Henry, who is the young actor that we heard in that scene, who was nominated for an Oscar and remains the youngest nominee ever at 8 years old. Just really stunning.
Yeah, an incredible performance, and that incredible performances across the board in that film. And I still can't watch it just weeping.
I was almost weeping, and we only watched 60 seconds of it. Let's go to the next one. This one, not quite as heavy a scene, but still on point, I would suggest. Here's a scene from War of the Roses. Let's take a listen.
I think you owe me, after this many pretty goddamn good years of marriage, a solid reason. I worked my ass off to make enough money to provide you with a good life. And you owe me a reason that makes sense. So let's hear it. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Because when I watch you eat, when I see you asleep, when I look at you lately, I just want to smash your face in.
Smash my face. Come on. You want to smash my face?
All right. Well, Michael Douglas literally took that one on the chin and sort of, I mean, it's a comical moment, but maybe there's something that sort of rings true in a lot of, I happen to be a divorce guy myself, and I know that those conversations pre-divorce are so incredibly painful, and it's hard. Most people don't do what the Kathleen Turner character did there. But enough of me, my thoughts. Peter, your thoughts on that scene.
Yeah, it's a great take on the genre, or it's a great scene that kind of does something different with the genre. We have a bunch of divorce films. We don't have a bunch of divorce films where the wife gets to punch her in the face.
Right.
You might punch a doll or a teddy bear, but not the partner in the face. I remember there were times in the writing when, in writing arguments, we wanted to sort of not actually have violence. We wanted to kind of keep it to what we felt was real in our experiences. I've had a number of relationships, but none of them been violent. But sometimes in most relationships, I mean, I'm not sure that you can have a relationship without also having the opposite of love at times, yeah. which is really natural and I think important to show flip sides.
It's okay to have the occasional moment where you do want to smash the other person. Hopefully you don't do it like she did.
Right, right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. That's one of the good things about film is that you can do it on film because it's not real. That there's a kind of purging that happens from that.
Yeah, I think War of the Roses is one of those films. I mean, it's clearly a wicked satire. It is a black comedy, and I don't know what went behind the planning of that film, but I wonder if it was the sort of what if question. What if people followed all of their darkest urges when it came to a divorce, and they're all laid bare in that film. So
yeah, that seems to be more in Marriage Story.
I haven't seen, but for sure, yeah. All right, let's go. We have time for one more. And this is from film Evan and I have talked a lot about, and it's Mrs. Doubtfire, and it's one of the more sort of somber moments in the film. Let's take a listen.
Ever since my children were born, the moment I looked at them, I was crazy about them. Once I held them, I was hooked. I'm addicted to my children, sir. I love them with all my heart. And the idea of someone telling me I can't be with them, I can't see them every day, it's like someone saying, I can't have air. I can't live without air, and I can't live without them. Listen, I would do anything. I just want to be with them. You know, I need that, sir. We have a history. And I just, they mean everything to me, and they need me as much as I need them.
I think, Evan, that eventually that was enough to melt the cold, dead heart of Sally Field's character in that movie. Yes. For a while, it was like everything was going against the poor Robin Williams character. But Peter, your thoughts on either that scene or the film Mrs. Doubtfire and how it dealt with divorce and child custody?
Yeah, I mean, it's another great, great example, but also a very different one. Robin Williams gives a really great performance in that film. And he is somebody who can be incredibly funny. I remember watching Mork and Mindy.
Me too.
And laughing at him. But he can also be really poignant and really emotionally moving. So I think that's why it's a great scene that works really well.
Agreed. Well, very good. You've passed the They Said It segment with flying colors, Peter. We're giving you.
Yeah. Also, I'm glad that I was sort of thinking like, oh, am I guessing at the quotation?
Oh, no. You tried to make
possible.
It easy.
I mean, I watch a lot of movies. Like I like to watch at least a movie a night. Last night was Lincoln.
Oh, really? That's a long night.
Not Lincoln. Oh, great. but I have.
Very good. All right, Evan, we will return to you to wrap things up.
Dave, that was fantastic. And Peter, I gotta tell you, this was fantastic. I really appreciate your take, your perspective. I want to thank you for coming on the Shine On podcast. The film Our Son, absolutely brilliant, tells such a compelling and important story. Again, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Season 4, episode 73, that's a wrap. What a show. Producer Dave, how great was this episode and the conversation with Peter?
A terrific podcast, and we kind of got to go to the movies along the way, which was great.
Nothing better than that. And Dave, thank you. And thank you to all the listeners. You can listen to the podcast wherever you subscribe to your podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, the Boston Podcast Network. I'm Evan Schein, and I'll talk to you again real soon.